stabilizing childcare in South Dakota might help the workforce get back to business. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Friday, July 9th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome South Dakota's Secretary of the Department of Social Services. Lori Gill is with us to talk about an influx of federal dollars and programs designed to help South Dakota families. Singer-songwriter Clayton Ryan joins us to explore the Great Midwestern Road Trip in a new release. We'll also hear Clayton play live from the SDPB Black Hills Studios. Plus, looking to the skies and reflecting the place you call home. We talk about the Deadwood asteroid with news from the Badlands Observatory. That's coming later in the hour. We are broadcasting live today from the Kirby Family Studio inside SDPB's Sioux Falls Studio. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
And with SDPB News, I'm Kyle Ireland. South Dakota is home to an underground experiment that studies dark matter, which scientists still struggle to define. An upcoming event this weekend gives people a chance to pick the brain of a physicist behind the experiment. SDPB's Jenna Scott has the story.
The Sanford Underground Research Facility in Lead is home to the Lux Zeppelin Dark Matter Experiment. Researchers in the underground lab are hunting for dark matter. Some of the work focuses on neutrinos, one of the smallest forms of dark matter. Hugh Lippincott is a physicist. He says this matter keeps the universe together and the planets rotating.
If you don't have this extra matter, no structure forms, right? So you wouldn't see the lovely, you know, galaxies that we see when we look up at the stars at night, because the structure wouldn't have clustered together. You need this glue, and that's what we think the dark matter is providing. So we wouldn't have the Milky Way without it. You know, we wouldn't maybe be having this conversation without it, but we don't know what it is. That's the mystery.
At the center of the Lux Zeppelin experiment is a detector. That equipment measures the field where scientists are gathering material. Scientists remove particles that can be mistaken for dark matter. By stripping that material away, they can better read the signals of potential dark matter. Lippincott says they are in the beginning stages of this process.
So the detector is sort of turning on, and we're exercising all of the parts that we've been working on for the last 5 to 10 years. So this is really the time where we actually see what is the thing that we've built and how well does it work. So we're in that commissioning phase right now, and you know, we're hoping to be collecting good physics data by the end of this year. So it's really exciting.
Hugh Lippincott will talk about the experiment at Neutrino Day, taking place July 9th and 10th. It's a virtual event with multiple speakers and interactive activities for people interested in science and technology. You can find more information for this event at neutrinoday.com. With South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I am Jenna Scott.
The Northern Fort Playhouse will return this summer for its 15th season at Fort Sisseton Historic State Park. The theater season was canceled last year due to the pandemic. Two shows have been scheduled, the musical comedy Don't Hug Me and The Oregon Trail, a play inspired by the classic computer game. Artistic director Dr. Kane Anderson says he can't wait to get started.
So I am brand new in this. So I have actually been kind of restarting everything from almost scratch in terms of our concept and what we're doing. And it's been exciting.
Fort Sisseton is about an hour east of Aberdeen. Anderson says the summer performances mean a lot to the community.
I love the idea that people here are willing to travel for theater, that they are hungry to see shows. They want to see something that's fun, that takes them away, that's different.
Performances begin today and run through the 24th. Visit northern.edu for showtimes and tickets. And in today's weather, we have a 50% chance of showers and some severe thunderstorms after 4 p.m. in the west. Chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly before 10 a.m. in the northeast. And a chance of showers and thunderstorms later today in the southeast. Going into tonight, showers and severe thunderstorms are likely before 11 p.m. in the west and northeast, and there's a slight chance of showers in the southeast. We have highs in the 80s in the west and northeast, and 70s in the southeast, with lows in the mid to low 60s. Going ahead to Saturday, we have a chance of showers and thunderstorms to continue across the state. For more news from SDPB, visit our website at sdpb.org/news. For the latest podcast from SDPB, visit sdpb.org/podcast. We're also available on Spotify and your podcasting platform of choice. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Kyle Ireland.
And I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakotans are closely monitoring the rain in this season of drought. Laura Edwards is the SDSU Extension State Climatologist, and she's joining us now from the Tom and Danielle Ahman Foundation Studio that's on the campus of Northern State University in Aberdeen. She's here for our weekly update. Laura Edwards, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you, Lori.
So we're watching the rain very closely, but it's not necessarily helping us out. Tell us a little bit about what's changed since last week.
Yeah, certainly this week is about the most typical week of summer weather we've had all year long, with temperatures kind of near average for this time of year, chances of rain, and the rain amounts we've seen over last week are kind of typical for this time of year, but I have a feeling it's going to be pretty short-lived. As we look out on next week this time, and it looks like hot and dry conditions returning to the area, very similar to what we saw a couple weeks ago across South Dakota. But yeah, you're right in that the rain amounts we're seeing right now aren't going to make a real big dent in the drought. They might hold things steady for a while, but we're deep in a hole of moisture that is going to take more than just a week to get out of.
Yeah. What parts of the state are suffering the worst? Give us that statewide overview if you can.
Sure. This week on the U.S. Drought Monitor map, they added a new area of extreme drought in the southeast, just around the Sioux Falls area and just west of there. So we're seeing actually a worsening of drought area. So I'd say the southeast there. The area of the Missouri River, both north central and south central part of the state, are right now looking to be about the worst as far as the drought monitor map goes. But we have about 72% of the state in severe drought or worse. So severe drought, that's maybe, you know, 5 to 7 times in a century kind of level drought. So really pretty tough conditions across most of the state.
So that impacts a lot of things, including fire season. My question to you that I'm wondering is, severe drought, 72% more than, when does it, how long can it take to go from a severe drought to an extreme drought or an exceptional drought? Like, how does it get worse and how fast does it get worse? What can you educate me about that?
Yeah, I think certainly the last 6 weeks or so, we've seen an intensification or worsening of drought conditions. And in the summer, that can happen very quickly with lack of rainfall, but also very hot temperatures, as we've seen, especially in the month of June and over the 4th of July holiday. As far as how fast can things turn around? Again, our climatology tells us our chances get slimmer and slimmer as now we're on the downhill side of our wet season, and we typically see less and less rain now through the end of the year. So, you know, we can see some small improvements here and there if we could get into a consistent wet pattern. But again, this 1 week of kind of chances of rain each day is not enough really to really do more than wet the soil.
Yeah. So from a climatology standpoint, how much worse can it get and how quickly can it turn worse when the temperatures are hot and, you know, we continue to be dry?
Yeah. Part of it is as far as the drought monitor goes, they partly look at impacts. So not just the climate data, but also impacts. How severe are we being affected? And that could be by water supply, by agriculture, even recreation, you know, with inaccessible, you know, boat launches and that kind of thing, wildlife and all that. So they kind of look for a little bit more impact as well. So kind of like if a tree falls in the woods, you know, if a drought has no impact, is it really a drought? Does it really mean anything?
Sure.
So they look at it both ways with climate data and in impacts.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on what we're looking forward to in the next week? Not a lot to be optimistic about.
Yeah, I think after the next couple days of kind of typical, you know, summer temperatures and chances of rain, as we just heard in the forecast a few minutes ago. Again, next weekend, we look towards warm and dry conditions. Very warm, maybe 90s, pushing 100 again on some areas in the northern, north central states. So I think July is going to end up warm and dry again in the last couple weeks of the month. So I think impacts are going to start accelerating here, especially on the agriculture side. And some of our water supplies.
Laura Edwards is the SDSU Extension State Climatologist, and she joins us from the Tom and Danielle Ahman studio there in Aberdeen at Northern State. Laura, thanks so much for being here with us once again.
All right. Thank you, Lori.
Ahead on the program, $25 million in federal money set to stabilize South Dakota child care. Department of Social Services Secretary Lori Gill is with us. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Getting canceled may be a distinctly contemporary phenomenon, but the debate around it has its roots in the 90s.
The panic over cancel culture is pretty much exactly the same as the panic over political correctness, just dialed up to 11 because of the influence of social media.
The consequences of speech and who gets to exact them. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by Art South Dakota, a catalyst for creative and artistic expression in communities and schools throughout South Dakota. Advancing the arts through education, service, and advocacy. More at artsouthdakota.org.
The night sky in a corner of West Texas is so dark that you can sometimes see the Milky Way, but
we have seen a gradually increasing glow that simply wasn't there in prior years.
Oil drilling. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Astronomers versus the oil fields next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain.
Program funding by the Sanford Underground Research Facility. Supporting public outreach through its free science festival, Neutrino Day, Star Chronicles. Join the fun in our virtual science town July 9th through the 10th. More at neutrinoday.com and sanfordlab.org.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, many South Dakota parents can't go to work if they can't access quality and affordable child care services. It's a basic truth that came into stark focus during the long disruption of the pandemic. The South Dakota Department of Social Services has received $25 million from the Federal Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act to support stabilization of child care programs in the state. Secretary Lori Gill joins us now with the details. Secretary Gill, welcome back to the program.
You bet. My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Let's put this in context for our listeners. First, this $25 million, how does that fit into the big picture of federal support and state support really targeting things like helping families get back to work or providing child care services? What do listeners really need to know before we begin this conversation, in other words?
Well, I think that one important fact is that we do have an Office of Child Care that already exists to provide child care assistance for families and for providers. We provide licensing and registration oversight, and we feel that we have a system out there that has always had the provision of those kinds of assistance available. And I would also say that we know that childcare is a big part of our economy. We have a bustling and robust economy in South Dakota right now. There are businesses out there that would love to be doing more than they're doing right now. They depend on the workers to do that. And through the pandemic, it has been very difficult when folks were preferring to be at home. We're getting back to normal in South Dakota, and what we know is that the child care system is so important to that getting back to normal. For folks that want to work and need a good, safe place for their kids to stay while they're working is important, and also if parents need to go back to school to get training, we have assistance for that as well, and child care plays a part of that. So all of this is tied together. It's all very important, and when we have the ability to tap into additional federal dollars to do things that we couldn't normally do with our budget, this is a great opportunity.
Let's talk about that opportunity more specifically then. $25 million, what's the plan?
Yeah, well, the Department of Social Services has received $25 million in federal coronavirus funding. We are now rolling out stabilization grants to eligible South Dakota child care providers so that we can ensure that they remain strong. We want to bolster them up so that they can remain in business and do the important work that they need to do. I already mentioned that we can help families that they serve to either go to work or to attend school through our programs. So sometimes people are doing both, and they need child care to be able to do that. You have to, in order to be eligible for these provider grants, you must be licensed or registered providers within the department. And we have contacted those people, those providers that we have contact information for and we already have a relationship with. We've contacted them and notified them directly about the dollars that are available and invited them to apply. We have a deadline date of July 23rd, and we want to continue to get the word out to those providers that we want you to apply. We want you to be aware for these dollars because we feel it's very important that you remain viable and can keep your doors open.
How can that money be spent? If a child care facility applies, what can they use the dollars for?
There's a variety of flexibility built into this about how providers can use their grants. They can use this to help pay child care staff wages. They can use it for operating costs, such as if they have rental costs, utilities, the food for the children, cleaning supplies, those kinds of things. And then if there are COVID-related expenses that they needed to incur and have ongoing, like personal protective equipment or other efforts to minimize the COVID risk, we can cover, they can use the dollars for those things. So we really have flexibility in there, and this is an opportunity to bolster up the budgets for the people that are providing this very important care in our state.
Are there ways that you think this grant money can be leveraged for long term, or is it more of a stabilization because of the disruption of the pandemic? How do you imagine that?
Right now, we're viewing this as stabilization right now. We're really focused here on getting our state back to normal, getting businesses open, getting people working, and this is really stabilization assistance at this time. I would also add that there are other things that we can do at the state level that also help providers outside of these grants, and examples would be us continuing to offer and offering more of training and offering CPR certification, for instance, to eligible providers so that we can make sure everybody's trained, and that's just the kind of a burden that we would like to take on for the providers. In the area of training, we have specific training that can deal with social emotional training so that they're better equipped to handle some of the behavioral issues that they might face. We've got materials that we can provide to the providers. We can expand some of the play therapy specialist access that we can provide. And there's various certifications and training fees and things like that that we can help with. So those are things that are also going on outside of the provider grants that go directly to providers that we can be providing.
Yeah, so this might be a little hypothetical, but help me think through this. It seems to me, logically, that some of these children maybe have been home with their families in a way that now they feel like they're transitioning back to daycare, might need a little assistance. They might be taking some, grief or trauma or disruption or stress, anxiety from this time of the pandemic back into those facilities. And child care workers are going to be dealing with that, which gets to what you were just saying about sort of that social, emotional support. Is there a way to make that ongoing through DSS, what you have? A facility puts in grant money and says, we're going to bring on some, paraprofessionals to sort of deal with this extra need. But it'd be nice to keep those people on board because that strengthens our offering as a child care service. Can you help me sort that through in my mind a little bit as far as I'm getting back to this idea of, like, how is this an opportunity to rethink how we do this and to continue doing it better?
Yep, absolutely. Those are great points. And, you know, we do have services that we have continued to provide before the pandemic, and we will continue to do afterwards. And some of those things that we already provide to help with the child care system are, we provide oversight, obviously, of the registered and licensed child care providers, but we have systems in place to provide technical assistance when they need it, and a lot of training to help promote safe, healthy, caring environments. We have that built into the licensing and registration, and also some quality improvement activities that we provide, so that if a provider wants to go through the steps of improving some of their offerings, we're there to provide that kind of technical assistance as well. And so I think that goes along with the thought process that you're talking about. We've got these opportunities right now to provide some of the social and, you know, emotional training in, and some of the therapies that might be available, play therapies and things like that, by bringing in access to the specialists that can help us with that. And then as we are looking at what our needs are long term, that's exactly the kind of work that the people that we have working in the offices work on ongoing. We get a lot of assistance from the federal government to a lot of access to some of the either funding or the providers that might be out there and the technical assistance. So we do have lots of things that we can provide. And I would just say that if anybody's listening to this, whether you are a family that might be in need and you aren't aware of our services, or whether you're a provider and you want to know more about becoming licensed or registered and what that's involved and the benefits that there are to you, we have our staff standing by to be able to answer those questions. You can give a call at 1-800-227-3020, and we have staff that can help you answer those types of questions.
Secretary Lori Gill is the head of the South Dakota Department of Social Services. Always generous with your time, Secretary Gill. Thank you so much for being here with us to help us understand how important those child care services are, and what the department is doing to stabilize that industry as part of this big economy package, as well as the well-being of the youngest among us. So thanks. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Clayton Ryan takes the great South Dakota road trip. We welcome the singer-songwriter to the SDPB Black Hills studio for Moment in Sound. That's coming next. You are listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'm Carl Gerke, and this evening on Jazz Nightly, we'll hear the latest from the great pianist George Cables, along with twin musicians, saxophonist Rawson Barber and trombonist Roland Barber, bassist singer Nikki Perrott, and saxophonist Bob Mintzer with the WDR Big Band from Cologne, Germany. Plus, we'll have classic tracks by drummer Tony Williams and pianist Errol Garner. You can join me at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by Denny Menholt Rapid Chevrolet in Rapid City, inviting you to experience the peace of mind and more that come with driving a certified vehicle from Denny Menholt Rapid Chevrolet. See you at Denny Menholt Rapid Chevrolet in Rapid City.
Saturday nights on SDPB Radio, we explore the highways and byways of American music. After American Roots, stay tuned and join me, Matt Wiesner, for 2 hours of Americana, roots, and blues, including South Dakota artists. It's On Record. Every Saturday night, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, here on member-supported SDPB Radio.
Program funding by the Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting public outreach through its free science festival, Neutrino Day, Star Chronicles. Join the fun in our virtual science town July 9th through the 10th. More at neutrinoday.com and sanfordlab.org.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. The Great Midwestern Road Trip continues. Musicians are packing their gear into vans and crisscrossing the state. Today we honor that journey with Moment in Sound. Black Hills singer-songwriter Clayton Ryan brings his guitar inside the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio at SDPB's Black Hills Studios for a little live music. And we're going to have some recorded music too. And Clayton Ryan, it's just great to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me back in the studio. I know last time we talked, at least last time I was in the studio, seems like forever ago, and it was quite the different world.
It's been a journey for sure. What has that been like for you as an artist, as you sort of navigated the drying up of live performances, or at least the alteration of it? Take me back and tell me what the last few months have been like for you.
Yeah, as I was telling Megan a little bit earlier while we were talking, I remember March 19th.
SDPB's Megan Feary, for those who are listening and seeing who's Megan. She's sitting there with you in the Black Hills. So, yeah, you're talking to Megan, and go ahead.
and I was saying how I remember March 19th as, like, a distinct doomsday for musicians last year, because that was the day I had two tours that were booked across the country cancel. The Black Hills Symphony had canceled. I was in the Firehouse Theater, and that canceled. And even my job with the Civic Center, we all got laid off. And so it was kind of like that seemed like the end of it all in terms of arts. So I spent really the summer of 2020 hiking and just writing music and trying to figure out what it really meant to be a musician. Because when you don't have the income coming and you're not playing for people, it kind of makes you sit back and think, who am I as a person before this? And how is music still important to me? And thankfully, things really picked up towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, when I joined the Brandon Jones Band, and we've been able to squeeze by on some good outdoor gigs and a lot of touring, and really, it's coming back with a boom, is what I'm feeling is in the air. You know, people want to see music again, and people are taking all the right steps so that we can do it better than before, honestly.
I want to go back to some of those hikes when you're really thinking about things like the role of the arts and your identity as an artist and how to create music in difficult times, how it's valued, how it's not valued, when is it essential, when is it not. Did you track that time? Were you writing those notes down? Were you making music out of those thoughts, or were you just sort of trying to untangle them in your own mind?
It was more so a time to unpack the personal aspect of who I am, because I was fresh off of college at the University of Northern Iowa, and so I devoted 5.5 years of intense look on music and gigging with my own bands, and it was the first time in my life that I didn't have the option to play music publicly anyway, and so it kind of meant I had time to figure out my foundation as a person, to figure out what I want to write about and what I want to play music for and why I do it. And it definitely, the outdoors led to a lot of inspiration too.
Yeah.
You know, hiking in the woods, plenty of scenic views that kind of make you realize how small you are. And it definitely helped me think about, you know, how to be more honest with my songwriting, because I am a tiny part of this world. And to understand that really helped me put into focus, you know, how important it is that I do what I want to do when it comes to writing music, rather than, you know, what would be selling or what would get people's attention.
That's interesting. All right. So you're going to play for us. You've got your guitar there, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what you need to say before you give us I Got a Soul.
For sure. Yeah. I Got a Soul is going to be the last track on the album that's dropping in October. The album's going to be called Wild Call. And I spent a lot of that time self-reflecting when I was hiking, and I'd spent so much time in college being almost nihilistic and just kind of thinking that being jaded and upset about the world meant that you knew how things were and that you were realistic. And I just remember one of my friends, a good friend of mine, Andrew Teutsch, is a keyboard player in Iowa, just said something along the lines of, like, it's not a good look anymore to be old and jaded, you know? We're young. We're at the time, you know, we were 23. It's like, why do you got to act like the old man? And so this song, I Got a Soul, is just all about recognizing that I'm young and I got friends in the world and a purpose that really drives, like, in the end, it's everything I got. And it's just a real gospel-like tune, super simple. You know, the importance is just, this is something I want people to just howl out at live shows if they feel so inclined. I got a soul that just won't quit. I got a soul that just won't quit. Well, I'm giving it a chance every step of the way. I got a soul that just won't quit. I got a mind that just won't quit. Yeah, I got a mind that just won't stop. I'll thought in and out, I'll start up and down. I got a mind that just won't stop. Every time I thought it was over, beaten and kicked to the ground. I got friends all over this great wide world that want me hanging around. I got a heart that just won't stop. I've got a heart that just won't stop. Well, I've lived and I've learned, I've loved and I've lost. I've got a heart that just won't stop. Every time I thought it was over, beaten and kicked to the floor, I picked myself up by the boots and give it some more. 'Cause I got a soul that just won't quit. I got a soul that just won't quit. When I'm giving it a chance every step of the way, I got a soul that just won't stop. I got a soul that just won't quit.
If you're just tuning in, that's a little bit of Clayton Ryan. He's seated in the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Black Hills studio, playing live there. And I'm joining you from the Sioux Falls studio, listening like everyone else. And what a delight. Clayton Ryan, thanks so much for that live performance. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's definitely the first time I've played that song, and it was a last-second decision.
Nice.
And I was like, I don't know if I even have these lyrics done yet, but I'm just feeling it today.
You know, I think is that our first time we had live music on the show since the pandemic. There we go. You're welcome.
A lot of firsts today.
You're welcome, South Dakota. That's it's back. Moment in Sound is back. Clayton Ryan is back. We're going to play a recorded track that you just dropped called Animals here in just a couple minutes. But I did want to talk to you about bringing new artists in and sort of the work that you're also doing to say, like, you know, how do we lift up this ecosystem of musicians, and tell me a little bit about your direction in that regard.
Yeah, I recently created Westward Talent Co. along with my friend Devin Sants, and we've got two missions with that agency. One is to bring touring bands here, because there's a lot of venues that are built for having touring acts that we're just not using. And I've talked with many people, and I feel that the South Dakota music scene doesn't know, you know, what it's missing out on. You know, I think a lot of us, including myself, we make a good living doing 3-hour bar gigs and restaurant gigs, playing covers and originals. And it's good money, but you don't see people coming out as much as you think that they should. And I think it's because South Dakotans have an idea about what live music is. And ideally, we want to bring in all these touring bands that you have no idea what they sound like. Like, you could go to the Knuckle or the Loud American or someplace, you know, the Cave Collective, and see like a glam rock band or a jazz group or, you know, a Tibetan throat singing trio, you know, something crazy. You don't know. And we want to kind of change and make it a little bit more spontaneous, where people have no idea what they're going to get, and it'll kind of revitalize our scene.
Yeah.
And the second part is, there's a lot of artists here that are incredible bands and incredibly talented artists that don't enjoy the aspect of booking and promotion and marketing, which is just so essential here. And I'm a weirdo in the sense that I'm addicted to that. Like, I love seeing the puzzle pieces fall in place when it comes to booking a tour or doing promotional marketing for a band. And so we're taking on local acts that want to tour outside of the Black Hills and want to grow their brand. And so far, we've got a couple great artists like Chris Huizenga, Beneath the Sky Down Yonder, and Humbletown are a couple that I'm now taking on to represent.
Yeah. Boy, that's good stuff. All right, bring them to the show, Clayton. Moment of Sound coming up next. Okay, we're going to leave listeners with animals, but I keep saying this is a road trip because the video for this is pretty much just like the great, you know, Midwestern throw the guys in the car and let's goof off across the road. So tell us a little bit about, if people go online, what they would see in the visual presentation of this song before we play it for folks.
Yeah, for sure. When I was writing the song, I wanted to make something that people could throw on a road trip playlist, something that makes people want to get in the car and go. And the song is based off of my upbringing in the small town of Winterset, Iowa, where in the summertime, the thing to do was just get in the car and go somewhere, whether that means going to swim in the river or going to hike in the woods or go chase after and flirt with girls, and all that stuff is happening between a summer job. And I wanted to capture that sort of thing and also the classic American road trip. And so I filmed it on the ride back from a gig in Nebraska with the Brandon Jones Band, and it's got everything in there that you expect, you know, the shots of the prairie rolling by, you know, gas station stops and antics, you know, guitarist Tom Freer riding a Sinclair Dinosaur. It's got everything that you'd expect.
All right, more from Clayton Ryan is available at claytonryanmusic.com. Clayton Ryan and the Singing Mountain can also be found on Facebook and Instagram. I'm going to say thank you to Clayton, and then we'll hit animals. Thank you, Clayton.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Let's take a moment now for poetry from Studio 47. Here's Patrick Hicks.
This is poetry from Studio 47. Welcome. Today's poet is Rudyard Kipling. Kipling was born on December 30th, 1865, in Bombay, India. He was raised in South Sea, England. He wasn't a particularly strong student, and it was decided that he wouldn't get a scholarship to Oxford, so because of this, he returned to India shortly after his 18th birthday. He wrote for newspapers in Lahore. As he grew more confident in his ability to write, he decided to return to London, which was the center of the publishing world. He traveled to Japan, spent time in America, where he met Mark Twain, and when he made a home in London, he began to write more. His fame grew, and in time, he would win the Nobel Prize in Literature. He eventually settled in Sussex, not far from the town of Brighton. Some of his many books include Just So Stories, Kim, The White Man's Burden, and The Jungle Book. He died on January 18, 1936, and he is buried in Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey in London. Today's poem is If. Kipling, it has to be said, is a divisive figure in literature today because he was a staunch monarchist and a determined British imperialist. His books and ideas today are problematic in a post-colonial world. They do, however, represent the mindset of the British in the late 19th and early 20th century. This mindset, this belief in British exceptionalism and the right to rule others, eventually led to the greatest tragedy in Kipling's life. He encouraged his son to join the Great War, also known as World War I. John Kipling died at the Battle of Loos within the first 48 hours of his arrival. John was Kipling's only son. Kipling would spend the rest of his life mourning this loss and recognizing that he was the one who pushed his son to enlist. I mention this because our poem for today is a father's advice to his son. This is If by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet them with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make the trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose, and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after you're gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and, which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
Poetry from Studio 47 is hosted and curated by Patrick Hicks. This episode was recorded at Augustana University and produced by Peter Folliard. Thank you for listening.
More poetry is available online at ps47.org. Up next, news from the Badlands Observatory in Quinn, South Dakota, as we look to the skies and see ourselves reflected in the galaxy. You're on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
This week on Science Friday, looking at the natural world from the rocks underfoot.
I got the idea to describe North America from one ocean to the other in a geological way.
To the shells on the beach.
I started thinking of seashells almost like an ambassador
Our Nature Walk begins on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, noon Mountain.
Program funding by a co-op agreement with the U.S. Small Business Administration. If COVID-19 impacted your business, SDCEO Women's Business Center offers complimentary confidential advice. More at bhsu.edu/SDCEO.
Hey everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace. You know, a lot has happened in this past year, and if it's taught us anything, it's taught us that we have a real need and a desire for thorough and factual reporting. That's what we do here at Marketplace, and that's what's being done at local public radio stations across this country. So thank you for listening and donating to public radio programming. We could not do the work we do every day without your support.
Program funding is provided by First Dakota National Bank. Every big endeavor begins somewhere, with someone who has a dream and the passion to make it happen first. FirstDakota.com/first.
Science and technology reporting is supported by Black Hills Information Security.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Ron Divig was just a boy in Deadwood whose Boy Scout leader introduced him to the night sky. Now he has honored the city of his youth by naming an asteroid after the town. Divig has been locating and tracking asteroids at the Badlands Observatory for more than two decades. Badlands Observatory in Quinn, South Dakota is an educational affiliate of the South Dakota Space Grant Consortium, and Ron Divig joins us today to talk about his latest discovery and why humans continue to look to the stars. Ron, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for asking me.
How are you? How are you doing right now? Post-pandemic, well, Badlands Observatory, I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, I guess it's we've been somewhat affected in similar ways to most of us over the last year or so. So yeah. It's been a challenging year, to say the least.
Yeah.
But things are going well now.
It's good to hear your voice and good to have you here. Tell us a little bit about locating and tracking asteroids and naming them, the whole process. This is not the first time that you have done this. But it's the first time you've named something after Deadwood, as I understand it. Tell me the story of that.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, it's really quite interesting because approximately 20 years ago, I embarked on the first light received through the telescope at Badlands Observatory. And I embarked on a project along with the Project Space Guard, which is an international program that was set up at the time, in order to help track and locate and determine accurate orbits for asteroids that have Earth-crossing orbits. That is, asteroids that you know, might potentially be dangerous of impacting the Earth. And the process of doing that, it was a fascinating process where basically my task was to do follow-up measurements of accurate positions for asteroids that had been discovered by the large national and international surveys. Yeah. And in the process of providing this follow-up information for them, I was fortunate enough to, on several occasions, to come across other objects in my same field of view that were newly undiscovered asteroids. And as it turns out, about 25 of those I received discovery credit for. And these particular objects didn't have Earth-crossing orbits, so they're not of the hazardous type, but are safely located in the main asteroid belts between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter.
I think that is so fascinating. So once you get discovery credit for it, you get the opportunity to pick a name that goes with the number. Explain to me how that works.
Yeah, that's kind of the international protocol that's been set up many years ago. There's a nomenclature committee that's set up under the direction of the International Astronomical Union, which is an organization that you might call it, it's sort of like the UN for astronomers.
Yeah.
And it's a collection of astronomers worldwide. The membership changes every so many years. And a select group of those people have the task of approving proposals for the names suggested for new astronomical objects. And as it turns out, with respect to asteroids, that the privilege of suggesting a name for an asteroid is given to the discoverer of the asteroid. And a lot of people are familiar with comets that often get named after the discoverer. That's not the case with asteroids, but the discoverer is permitted the privilege of suggesting a name.
Yeah.
And however, it's not a quick process, because once the asteroid is discovered, it has to be observed for several years, actually, before the orbit becomes well known enough to give receive a permanent number.
Okay.
At which point, then it becomes nameable.
Okay, so tell me, what can you tell me that would make sense to me about where this asteroid is located? It's not crossing orbit with Earth. It's not a threat to anything. Where is it?
Yes, well, the asteroid belt is the area between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter, and it's generally accepted that this is an area where a planet probably should have formed back when the solar system was forming with the rest of the planets. However, because Jupiter is so large, it has a large gravitational effect on the small objects in that area, and that probably prevented a larger planet from being formed between Mars and Jupiter. And instead, you have a collection of much smaller bodies, a whole cloud of them, that are orbiting in this region, which is referred to as the main asteroid belt. But occasionally, some of these objects occasionally get fairly close to Jupiter, and the effect of Jupiter's gravity will change the orbits of a number of those, and they develop more elongated elliptical-type orbits, and some of them can swing far enough in to where they actually will cross the orbits of Mars and Earth. And some of those, of course, can be potentially hazardous.
Wow.
It's speculated that one of these that was about 6.5 miles in diameter collided with the Earth about 60 million years ago, which had a large role in probably the end of the era of the dinosaurs.
Wow. Ron Divig, I hope you will come back in the future and tell us more about what's happening at the Badlands Observatory. We really, really appreciate your time.
Well, it's entirely my pleasure, and I appreciate your asking me. It's been a great experience.
That asteroid, again, is named Deadwood. Ron Divig grew up in Deadwood as a young boy, and that's where he learned to enjoy the night sky. More information is available at badlandsobservatory.com. South Dakota Public Broadcasting and Levitt at the Falls are partnering this summer to bring you the digital series Music Matters. Host Apollonia Davalos introduces artists and explores community as it intersects with musical expression. In this week's episode, she talks with Mae Simpson of the Mae Simpson Band.
Today, we get soulful with singer-songwriter Mae Simpson. Mae is a vocal powerhouse with infused rhythms of blues, jazz, rock, country, calypso, and the list goes on. So Music Matters is pumped to present Mae Simpson.
It's something special about you, baby. It's something real about you too, yeah.
Music matters for a million reasons. It could be a feeling or an emotion. I can't tell you how many times that I've attached a song to a feeling that I'm having. There's so many feelings that you can have, and I think that music really is the ability to express that. I think our music does a really good job of expressing that connectivity, the love that is shared between the members, and the love that is kind of within the lyrics. It's kind of ingrained in me to write love songs, and it doesn't matter about what kind of a song it is, funk, blues, soul. Any kind of song is always kind of back to love. And I think the expression of that is not only within the lyrics, but it's within the feeling of when you're playing those songs. Well, I think specifically you're going to hear a song today that definitely pushes the envelope. It's about women, it's about fighting, it's about pushing your way to the top and not stopping, because nobody can stop you. And it's high time that nobody does stop you. So it's very important for me to make sure that we have those kinds of influences in our music. Not only with that though, the band also, we don't play to one genre. We've never done that. We never will do that. And I think that's in itself pushing the envelope. So I was born in South Carolina, picking up pecans for work, you know, I was poor, you know, so everything that I do really does go back to my Southern roots, and I'm really happy about that, because not only is it the ability to grab people's attention when you hit them with that first note, but it's also a home feeling, a settled feeling. I definitely have a story about a positive impact that our music has done. We had a show one day and somebody was having a really rough day. I didn't know how rough that day was, but it turned out to be really, really rough. And after the show, they pulled me aside and the only thing that they said was, "You saved me tonight." And I think that is probably the most powerful moment I've had as a musician. You know, I think the biggest thing that I just want people to just not only listen to music, but feel the music and be yourself and be who you are and be proud about it and always make decisions based off here and here. It's a fine line, but if you can do it and you know you're doing what you love, there's no way you can go wrong.
May, thank you so very much for sharing a part of your story and your music with us.
Absolutely, I appreciate you for having me on.
So everyone, please support May Simpson. Check out her website, maysimpsonmusic.com. Give her a follow on social media. And be sure to like, comment, and share this video. We want your feedback. Stay tuned. You're going to hear next from Maddie Todd, who's going to be opening for May today. And she's a Sioux Falls local, so give her a shout. And we want to thank our sponsor, Dan and Arlene Kirby, and also the Mortimer Mimi Levitt Foundation. Thank you for your mission for building community through music. I am your host, Apollonia Davalos. We'll see you next time. Mwah! I love you.
It's a little bit from the digital series Music Matters. You can find it on the SDPB Facebook page and at sdpb.org. This weekend at the Levitt Shell, Rhythm Collective plays original reggae and calypso tunes on Friday. Saturday, Chastity Brown melds folk, pop, and soul for a poetic performance. The full concert schedule available at levittsiouxfalls.org.